So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio.
Coming up today on Trending, my husband Gabriel is with me. We're going to dive into St. Joseph in his interior life. We'll also discuss a lot about his humility. Today, we'll also discuss masculinity and how St. Joseph is that model of the perfection of being a man, being a father, and of patriarchy. You know, today, red alert, the word patriarchy can be a bit of a trigger for people, but patriarchy is what all of the great men of sacred scripture were. They were patriarchs. And in fact, in the church, we've always upheld the idea of patriarchy. The problem is that today we've lost sight of what patriarchy is, essentially being the head of your family, but more importantly, a loving father and a loving and respectable husband who takes a sense of responsibility for those who are entrusted to him. But the problem is today people have a problem with what they think patriarchy is. And this is why St. Joseph, who is a patriarch, clashes against modern ideas of manhood for many people. So joining me, we'll dive into this as well as how men are suffering a friendship recession. We'll dive into the friendship recession and much more. Again, joining me today is my husband, Gabriel. Welcome to Trending.
Glad to be back.
Okay, so you and I have been talking over the last couple of weeks about this article that came out on the National Review. It's written by Daniel Cox. It's titled, American Men Suffer a Friendship Recession. I remember a handful of years ago, I covered a story about how middle-aged and specifically married men were suffering a friendship recession. They had no friends, and this was viewed as particularly problematic for married men because so often we've seen cases where men need other men to help challenge them into the mission that they're living out, into their vocation. Men need other men to have that perspective, to see what's happening, to see into each other's lives. And men in particular influence and grow one another when it comes to religion, among other things. So let's touch first on this whole idea of how men are suffering a friendship recession and the crisis, especially for married men.
I think that a lot of guys, they're lacking shared experiences that are rigorous and intense with other men. I think that hanging out and going to dinner and watching the game is fine, but I don't think it should end there. I think that what we are experiencing is that's where it does end. Is okay, yeah. Let's just grab a beer, watch the game, or let's just do something casual. Those are events that should happen rarely. Actually, more things should take place where there is something more intense. For example, going camping and not really enjoying it, or just kind of detaching yourself from the comfort with your friend, or going off-roading and getting your car stuck. You know, just a random example. Just things where it requires physicality. Mm-hmm. I think that in those moments, friendship really intensifies. And I know that's really hard to explain on a philosophical level, but for a guy sitting around and not using our tools or not using our own bodies, it's not healthy.
When you say your tools, what do you mean?
Just things. You know, we use our hands and we're just very physical. We're just physical oriented. And so, like, for example, like I said about the car, or going camping, or playing sports,
Would you say that men need to take on challenges together.
Yeah, that's the word I'm looking for. Mm-hmm. It's those physical challenges.
You know, it's interesting because I think a lot of men might respond to, hey, man, I've never been camping. I'm not really interested in camping. I'm not an outdoors person. You know, you could go through these litany of things. You know, a lot of people do live a city life. I've never had that level of outdoor exposure. But what I find very often is that many men who maybe have never had that or did many years ago in Boy Scouts or whatever that was when they were younger, often actually desire, like, I actually would like to go camping, but, like, start soft on me. Like, don't take me out and expect me to sleep with no tent to ruck it out.
Who cares? Do it anyways. There's no excuse for that. I think going out and just embracing that suck with, you know, another friend of yours is so beneficial. And it is abrasive. I mean, you're detoxifying yourself from things that are comfortable, you know, going out in the wilderness and sleeping in a tent or not even in a tent or sleeping in the cold. You're not in your warm bed at night. It's not comfortable. But you're doing it together. And or just doing XS 90 with a bunch of guys. And, you know, that's also a great way to enhance friendship. It's at the end of the day, it's like Braveheart. In the very beginning of the movie, when they were young, the way they played with each other was very aggressive. They threw rocks at each other and they beat the crap out of each other. But that was actually a good thing. We need those moments of physical abrasiveness because that's just how we're built internally. And again, it's hard to explain on so many different levels, but when you start to engage in these activities, you actually realize, wait a second, I'm actually building a really deep friendship with this person.
You know, I remember there was a commercial that came out a couple of years ago. I can't remember where it was. Was it Gillette, maybe? Where a couple of boys are fighting and the dads jump in and they say, oh no, don't do that. And they're like telling the boys not to fight. I might be wrong about it being Gillette. Do you remember this commercial?
Yeah,
from something a couple like that. Years ago?
Yeah.
And it was interesting because, of course, kids shouldn't just fight and pummel on each other. Unfortunately, this is sometimes what boys do. They have a tendency to fight, and it's something that they have to work through to channel their aggression and properly find the balance of the responsibility of their bodies to protect and the capacity they have to fight with other individuals. But I thought it was interesting because the commercial kind of played this, you know, don't do anything like that. It was like this overly gentle, it took a 180 in an opposite direction. And I think that so often we live in a culture where men don't know what to do with each other. We have a very effeminate culture. We have a culture where if two men are close to one another, they're looked at as gay and can be mocked, whether that's as a joke or seriously. Do you think that pressure that society has put on men in terms of the types of things they do to be gentle or the idea that, oh, you can be gay if you're too close to a guy has led to men having fewer close male friendships and keeping them at a distance?
Yeah, I think so. I think that, first off, for that commercial, little boys fighting is actually healthy. I think that should happen more often. I think that that helps them orient themselves so that they understand themselves, the people around them, and by having those physical combative moments, that actually helps them be gentle around people who shouldn't be physical, like girls or older or seniors. I mean, they understand the world around them, and it's I know that sounds crazy, but you know, when I was a kid, wrestling with my dad and wrestling with my friends, my dad also taught me to look at my sisters as gentle creatures. And my dad said, "You need to be a gentleman to your sisters and to other girls." But he never and you need to be gentle to them. But he never said you need to be gentle to other guys. So when I was with my friends, we just wrestled. We threw sticks and stones at each other and just, you know, just had absolute fun. But just by saying that one thing, you have to be gentle towards those people or towards women. It actually helped me understand my place in the world and helped me understand how I should interact with girls and boys.
Do you think sometimes our perspective, and if you're just joining us, you're listening to Trending with Tim Ray, my husband Gabriel's joining me here today on Relevant Radio, and I was wondering, you know, do you think maybe because we are so far removed from a culture that it has been demanded of us, specifically our men, to protect and defend, for example, here in the United States, that we haven't had to, you know, defend our property, protect our home, engage in war, that perhaps that mindset of fully understanding the importance of the physical capacity to defend and protect has been lost?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, I think you hit the nail on the head right there.
And I think this is interesting because your own dad has actually, he's a migrant here to the United States. Mm-hmm. You know, you are 100% Lebanese, Maronite Catholic, and your father migrated from Lebanon. Mm-hmm. And he fought in the Christian militia against the Muslims before he was even over the age of 20. He came here to the United States at 17 years old.
Yeah.
Because he had been fighting in the Christian militia for mm-hmm. his family, for his friends. How old was he when he left home to fight in the Christian militia?
Yeah, I think he was like 16 or something.
Yeah, I mean, so, and he saw his closest friends die, he saw family die, he saw his own home blown up. And so your dad has the perspective of someone who has physically had to fight for his life.
Yeah.
And so that perspective in terms of it's okay for the body to be something used to defend and protect is something very close in terms of a generation for you and stories. But for most of us here in the United States, unless we have someone who grew up military, that's a little further removed. I mean, going all the way back, you know, 30, 40, 50 years now.
Yeah. The only problem or the only disconnect that we have as Americans is that we're so comfortable. Mm-hmm. And I always come back to this. I know I've been on the show a lot of times and I always bring up comfort, but like that's the key to failure is embracing comfort. People, it doesn't matter where you are in the world. It doesn't matter what type of country you live in, first world, third world, whatever. The only difference that we have is that we have cushioned things here. Our beds are softer here. Our couches are softer. We have potato chips. They taste good. I mean, there's things that are just, that just keep us in this bubble and they keep us content. And that's a travesty because we can see it in our culture today. Because of comfort, it compounds over generation over generation. And now we're at the point where men literally have no idea who they are. And they don't know their relation to the world. And in order to keep your mind and body in tune with natural law, yeah, I could say natural law, really, is to do those hard things, to embrace the strenuous life. Mm-hmm. To, you know, just because you have food in the fridge doesn't mean you have to eat it.
So let's bring this back to friendship, because the study conducted by the survey by the Center of American Life, they showed this intensity in terms of a recession when it comes to friendship that's particularly bad for men. If you compare the percentages of men with at least six close friends, that's fallen between 1990 and today. It's fallen from 55% of men had a good solid six close friends back in the early 90s to today only 27% of men. And we could go on and even just say in general, men are reporting that they don't even have a close friend.
Yeah.
And this is particularly bad among single and unmarried men. So these men who also don't have any sort of romantic relationship either. Do you think, and this is one thing that stood out in my survey, it talks about six close friends. I don't know why they focus so much on six, but do you think the focus of having six close friends for a man's too much?
You know, I just think it's just, I don't think a number is even relevant.
Yeah.
I think that having friends is so crucial. Having at least one friend brings you closer to sanity. And so that's the best advice that I could...
Why do you say closer to sanity?
Well, because closer to sanity in terms of not having a friend can lead to despair.
Mm-hmm.
And these men who are suffering friendship is leading them to despair. Yeah. It really is.
This loneliness, yeah. This isolation, the suicidality in our country right now.
Yeah. There's a small collection of guys that I can reach out to on a deep level and have profound conversations with. If I take half of those guys away, I'm still in a centered, focused position where I can still have those meaningful conversations with those other guys. But the problem is, if I have no one, I can easily lead to despair. I have no idea who to speak to. How do I reason through my confusion of things? And so my answer is, don't focus on six. Just focus on
one.
On one, or focus on just that one person that you do know of. Mm-hmm. And the question is okay, well, there's that one guy that I see all the time at work or church or wherever, my neighbor. How do I even take that first step? Mm-hmm. Just invite them to go camping or play a sport or...
I joke, invite them to go on a vacation with you. I was just on the phone with my mom the other day. We ended up, a colleague of mine called us up and he said, hey, I know this is random, I don't really know you, but would you and your husband like to go on vacation with our family? We have a cabin up in northern Wisconsin. And it was so random, but it was, yeah, we'd love to. You got to know each other a little bit better. Mm-hmm. We had a blast. And I was telling my mom this, and she said, you know what, that's how I made one of my closest friends. She literally called me on the phone and said, hey, I'd like to be your friend. Do you want to hang out? And I think it's as simple as that. Sometimes we overcomplicate it. What responsibility do you think men have to cultivate new friendships?
The responsibility?
Yeah.
It's profound. I mean, it's part, again, it comes back to sanity. It's part of who we are. And even when you're single or married, it doesn't matter what your state in life is. Be that initiator. Go out and invite and just ask that one guy. And I think that's why, you know, Luke, the guy that invited us to the cabin, that was so awesome. Because, I mean, that was the best vacation I've had in so many years. I did water skiing and we did off-roading and it was just an absolute blast. And we weren't doing comfortable things. We weren't just hanging out and lounging. I mean, we were doing fun physical activities.
Couple things that stand out to me, and they've been addressed in this recent study surrounding the crisis of male friendship in the United States, has to do with the idea of how communication and distance has changed. Often we see that today people kind of stash their friendships away, especially men. You know, if you ask a man, hey, you know, who are your friends? A lot of men might still say, you know, from high school, college, 20, 30 years later, but these are people who live states away from them, and maybe they haven't spoken to them in 2 or 3 years, which it's great to maintain those friendships to be able to pick up where you left off, but they're not people who they're spending any sort of frequent time with, aren't in their day-to-day, and it makes me think of how communication has completely changed. It's a little easier for a woman to pick up the phone and chat on the phone for a longer period of time. Men aren't as in tune with that sort of communication. It doesn't fit as well. Do you think that men need to try to embrace conversations on the phone more or seek those face-to-face conversations or more so friendships and activities and challenges?
Yeah, you know, I think this is an important question, but I think there's more important questions to
have. Such as what?
Another important question would be what to talk about instead.
When you're talking to your friends.
Yeah. So, like, if you don't want to talk on the phone, don't talk on the phone. It's not that big of a deal. Mm-hmm. You know, FaceTime, whatever. I don't know. Meet up with them. I mean, as long as you are interacting with them in some capacity, that's the most important part. And what I have discovered, and I don't know if this is correct for all men in general, but I can have the most incredible conversations with some of my friends when we're not talking about ourselves and we're talking about ideas. Mm-hmm. I know for a fact that, you know, when I talk to my brother-in-law, we talk a lot about business ideas and just business theories. But then that opens up a wormhole of so many different types of other things that we do talk about. And that really enhances our relationship. My friend Jorge and I, we always start the conversations off naturally. We don't even force it. We just always talk about working out and theology. And so that...
there's always some sort of debate. What do you think about X? What do you think about Y? Yeah,
we love yelling at each other. And we love debating. And it's just, it's so much fun. That's just the way our dynamic, our relationship is. And also, Jorge and I love camping together. And just, again, embracing that discomfort.
I think Jorge's the one who first got you to camp outside with just a sleeping bag and no tent, if I remember correctly.
That was a new experience, and it was awesome. I'm glad I did it.
And you're willing to do it again, even though you had a lot of trepidation the first time.
Yeah. I had a lot of bugs on me, and but it was worth it. It was so much fun.
Okay. You're listening to Trending with Timory here on Relevant Radio. We're diving into the topic of the friendship epidemic and crisis, especially for men. Quick couple tips that you'd recommend for how people can make new friendships.
Number one tip is just be that initiator. Walk up to that guy and ask him what his hobbies are. Ask him, hey, do you want to go out to dinner and watch the game? I mean, you should do that.
That's what you said not to
do. Well, you should do that as an initiator.
Okay.
Yeah. That shouldn't be the friendship. Yeah. That's the difference, what I'm saying.
Okay.
Is that you can do those small things as the initiator. And those are good things, but if that's going to be the epicenter of your friendship, you have to reevaluate.
A fun thing that I just thought of that I thought was really cool, if you're involved in any sort of parish ministry, working in a parish, I remember a couple years ago at our church, our priest actually had a tree cutting event where he invited all the men of the parish to come and help trim all of the trees for the parish grounds. They had a lot of land and tons of trees, and they said, you know, instead of spending all of the money, why don't we just invite all the men of the parish? And it was such a good bonding event for the men to come and have something to do, something, you know, that they could do with their hands side by side, meet new people. You know, things like this, men are waiting for an opportunity to be asked to help, to step up, and to do it together. These are great things that our parents just offered as opportunities for men to come together. So just some ideas for friendship to reconsider, to think about the importance of friendship, especially for men. You're listening to Trending with Timory here on Relevant Radio. Coming up, I'm going to be discussing with my husband, Gabriel St. Joseph, his interior life, humility, and we'll also discuss how a man's soul and body are fashioned. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio Line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/forester.
We're talking about what you're thinking about. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Welcome back. My husband Gabriel's joining me during the show today. We're discussing friendship here on the show, and I think the next conversation really does a good job of falling on the heels of what we had to say about friendship in this friendship crisis, especially for men in America. Coming up, we're going to discuss St. Joseph, his interior life, as well as his humility and how he's a model of perfection for men, fatherhood, and of, surprise, surprise, patriarchy. So let's talk, and joining us as well in the background is my baby girl. If you are hearing her, she's hanging out with us while we're recording this today. And so something St. Edith Stein said, and I discussed this a little bit on Monday on her feast day. She, if you don't know anything about her, was a person who lived during World War II. She actually died in Auschwitz really faced the impact of Nazi Germany. She was a convert from being a Jew to an Anglican to, or sorry, not an Anglican. Catholic sword. Agnostic to ultimately becoming a Catholic and a Catholic nun. Now, something she said, again, my husband Gabriel's here with me, is she commented about how women are more naturally oriented in their bodies and souls to cherish, guard, and preserve. But men specifically are more oriented toward fighting and conquering. We've already discussed this in some capacity during our conversation surrounding friendship, but I'd like to tease out a little bit more this idea of how men's bodies and their souls are oriented toward fighting and conquering.
What she said, it doesn't sound cultural, or what she said isn't even cultural. I think that what she is saying is embedded in us biologically. Mm-hmm. And spiritually. Mm-hmm. And when we live in a culture that is trying to detach us from who we are as men, that's the problem that we're noticing. Mm-hmm. And so when she says that men are ordered towards battle, ordered towards the physical, this is so true. And every man knows innately that that is true, even though they try to push against that. Mm-hmm.
Would you say possibly that this, and by the way, Edith Stein is a philosopher as well, if you didn't know this. Would you say that men, in the lax mentality they have today about physical fitness, we're going to touch on this in a minute, about physical fitness and being protectors, defending other people, it's a lash out against the idea of what is ingrained in them. It's kind of like a 180 turn almost.
Yeah, I could totally see that. I think that working out can also be a double-edged sword. You know, they have this desire to work out, but because it makes them look so good versus I need to work out because I need to protect. I need to be physically fit. I need to be strong. I need to be alert. I need to be ready. You see that difference?
Yes. Yeah. Okay, let's talk a little bit more about this fighting and conquering that men's bodies and souls are fashioned toward. On the level of the soul and body, I think complementing each other, I think men are really called to build up what is good in the world and destroy what is evil. And this is seen in a particular way when we have this mindset of men being called to fight and conquer.
Yes, absolutely. I think that we can see this in our families, in our communities. We have it, the duty lies in us as men to defend the good and to rebuke the evil. And we can see this in politics. We can see this on community levels. We can see this on a cultural level. And the red flag is up. I mean, we know what's going on in the world. We don't have to delve deep into that. There's an obligation for us as men to stand up for the truth. And that takes a lot of courage. That takes a lot of humility. That's something that I fail to do every single day. But we need, oh, perfect segue. We need that intercession and the guidance of St. Joseph.
We're going to come to St. Joseph in just a moment here. A question that you asked when we were discussing this last night, you asked, is it immoral for a man to not be battle ready, to be in shape, to be prepared physically to defend and protect, but I also argue spiritually as well.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, so I don't know the answer to this, and I think that this is good to discuss because I'd love to hear what your listeners have to say. But really, is it immoral for a man to be physically unfit, to be spiritually unfit? Is it immoral for a man to not pursue the disciplined life? I don't know.
We live in a time where immorality is second nature. It's the norm, where comfort is normalized. But just because comfort is so easily accessible, and just because most people aren't pursuing a virtuous life, does that mean that it's right? And yeah. I think that that's the question here.
Yeah. Yeah. I know that I'm beating a dead horse here, but also, is it okay or is it morally okay to always choose the comfortable route?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's funny you say that, because on a side note, setting this away from the idea of men's bodies and souls being oriented toward fighting and conquering, this past week we were out on the boat water skiing, and there was a really rainy day, the air was cold, but we were still willing to go water skiing, and so I said, hey, Timmy, do you want to go out? I'm like, oh man, I want to, but the idea of being in and out of the water and the cold, rainy air and being cold. And I remember telling one of the guys, I'm like, I just, ever since I had the baby, the desire to do something uncomfortable like that and to be cold and wet just sounds terrible to me. But I'm going to do it because I know I should.
Yeah.
And I've gotten so used to avoiding some of the less pleasant things. And even though that would be fun, it doesn't sound fun to be in the cold like that.
Yeah. Yeah, but you did it anyways. We still went on the boat, and we still water skied. And
it wasn't even cold.
It wasn't that cold.
It was so much fun. You're listening to Trending with Timmy here on Relevant Radio. And I want to dive with you into a conversation having to do with St. Joseph. I know that St. Joseph has been near and dear to your heart, mind, and contemplation. So we're going to come back, and we're going to discuss his humility, but also St. Joseph's interior life.
Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timmery on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
As always, it's Wednesday, and here on Trending, we dive into St. Joseph themes about him, his life, and St. Joseph. The reason for this is in the tradition of the church, Wednesdays are dedicated to our companion, St. Joseph, and also making sacrifices in our lives, penances, an opportunity for abstinence and fasting. So my husband Gabriel's joining me today here on the show, and I know you've been meditating a lot recently. We've been discussing this upon St. Joseph's interior life. There's been a special prayer. You've actually been praying one of the St. Joseph's prayer books. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about that and how it sparked some of this conversation we've had over his interior life.
Yeah, it's a prayer that encourages you to contemplate and meditate on St. Joseph 4 times a day. And so in each moment, there's something specific. So in the mornings, we meditate on St. Joseph's fidelity to grace. The next, we talk about his relationship with Christ and his love for Mary and so on. So there's always just a theme for every meditative moment in the day, which is awesome. It has helped me deepen my relationship with him, but with also Christ and with Our Lady, which has been spectacular.
So let's talk a little bit about his interior life. I know that there have been moments where you've really just thought about, wow, he is such a humble individual when you think about the power, the authority, and the control he had over the Holy Family and what he did and didn't do.
Yeah, I think what blew my mind was that I was thinking about the title of St. Joseph, Terror of Demons. And why do we like that so much? Why do I personally like that so much? And it's not it's not emotional, like, oh, yeah, that sounds so cool.
It sounds so BA.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, initially, that's where my mind went initially. Like, yeah, that does sound hardcore. However, why is it such a big deal that he is the Terror of Demons? And excuse little baby in the back. It is point blank his humility. There was a moment where the angel of the Lord came to him and said, you're going to do this. You're going to do this thing. You're going to have the toughest job a father could ever imagine. You're going to father and be the spiritual head of God. I mean, that's God incarnate.
Jesus Christ.
That is mind-boggling to even think that there was a moment in time where a human looked to the God of the universe and said, chew your vegetables. Mm. I mean, that right there is humility. Mm-hmm. That right there is, okay, I have to understand my relationship with the God King who sits in front of me, and I'm changing his diapers, and I need to just go out and be a carpenter and provide for this family. And not once did he falter on his spiritual authority over his family. Not once did he abuse his authority in any way, in any capacity. And that moment, his entire life is humility. And in that, we can see that he truly is the terror of demons, because that is directly opposite of what his ultimate sin could have been, and that is the destruction of the family through pride.
Mm-hmm. Or interrupting salvation history. I mean, he had that capacity when we think about it. Now, Grant, God is all-powerful, and he could have worked even in the midst of St. Joseph's faults and failings. But as you said, St. Joseph had the spiritual authority, and when the angel came to him in a dream and told him, hey, you don't have to set Mary aside quietly, that first dream, because she has conceived, and she's conceived by the power of the Holy Spirit. He chose to follow that. And let's talk a little bit about that dream, because there had to have been a moment where he's dreaming, he has this vision from the angel, this revelation that Our Lady is conceived by the Holy Spirit, but there had to have been a prayer for him, a conversation he had with God.
Yeah, yes, it was a dream, but it had to be more than that. I mean, God had to reveal so much to St. Joseph so that he could understand. However, I was thinking about this morning. Maybe it was just a very simple little dream. Maybe St. Joseph just woke up and said, wait, what was that? And what really allowed him to succeed in his fatherhood was his fidelity to grace.
His docility to the will of God in his life and discerning it as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's very profound. Let's talk about how he's a terror of demons. Why is this significant within the perspective of his authority over Mary and Jesus?
You know, I think it all comes back to his profound humility. I mean, everything that he did, it was to provide and to protect. But that alone, as Joseph stands as spiritual head of the Holy Family, that authority, that spiritual authority right there, that's the terror. It's specifically his authority and how he never abused it.
He was the bearer of salvation history in a certain respect. You know, as I think about this, it's so significant that in his humility, he was willing to hold within his arms all of salvation history. That he was willing and he saw the Blessed Virgin Mary and his responsibility for each of them. And he took that on, whether it had to do with him traveling to Egypt or him creating a new life in Egypt, or being docile to the will of God yet again, and in the dream being revealed by the angel both to go to Egypt and return from Egypt.
Yeah, and that's not a small task. You know, in that moment of him thinking to himself, okay, I need to carry this child with me from Israel to Egypt. He's not even my biological son. And I really didn't want to do this in the first place. You know, that this is really, really messed up. But here's where I am.
You think it's messed up because it's not Jesus isn't his biological son?
Well, maybe. I mean...
Being forced to take responsibility for someone and something you didn't intend to?
Yeah, think of it this way. There was a moment where Joseph wanted to divorce Mary, because when he finds out that she's pregnant, he thinks to himself, what did I get myself into? Like, I need to separate myself, not just for myself, but because of his profound love for Mary also.
He knew something was special happening with Our Lady.
Yes.
He knew that she didn't just cheat on him or take her own path. He knew something special was happening. That's part of the reason why he was choosing to set her aside quietly.
Right.
Is he actually, we've seen in a lot of the meditation on St. Joseph, it's believed, the tradition holds, that he recognized something special was happening here, and he was taking himself and setting it outside of everything that was going on, because he almost didn't see himself as worthy in a certain respect.
Exactly. And so that worthiness That is what I think was going on when you're traveling and you're going through all of these challenges. He asks himself the question, or he even convinces himself, yeah, I am not worthy to do this. I mean, that is pure humility. But also another thing that I wanted to add was that you can't be old and travel and defend your family to Egypt. And you can't be old and be a father as how tradition or as cultural tradition says that St. Joseph was old. I don't think St. Joseph was old.
It wasn't even in the tradition. It was just portrayed in art, and this started to be done specifically because people were trying to preserve Mary's virginity. It was almost used as kind of a poking out your elbow saying, hey, Mary's a virgin, so we'll just suddenly create St. Joseph as this old-looking man to make people believe that he wouldn't have been tempted.
Yeah, and I honestly believe that he was just as old as Mary was. I mean, he was also very young.
And I think that we see a sense of responsibility and establish a business in St. Joseph. He would have had that set up in his life where he was able to provide and protect for her. And it was normal. You have to remember in ancient Israel for there to be perhaps larger age gaps than we are even used to today. But that doesn't mean that there was such a large age gap between Joseph and Mary that it was, 30, 40, 50 years. We're talking maybe 15, 20. And think of Our Lady as a very, very young teenager.
Yeah, absolutely.
We have our baby here hanging out with us while we're here with you live for Trending. And joining me, if you're just joining us, is my husband Gabriel, and we're meditating upon Saint Joseph, his interior life, and especially his humility. What else has been, I think, prevalent for you as you've been going through this special prayer where you're supposed to ponder St. Joseph four times a day as you've been thinking through his interior life, the reality of him changing diapers just like you do as a dad, mm-hmm. Teaching your kid how to eat solids, these various things that require a lot of patience. Yet St. Joseph was doing this with Jesus, who is God.
Yeah, I think another thing that was really inspiring for me was his love for Mary. There was this moment where I thought to myself, his love for her, there was a moment where he saw Mary and he understood her authority. He saw hyperdulia in her. And he knew who she was. And knowing that he is the spouse, it must have been this most profound exploration of love. So perfect in a sense that he didn't need passion. There was no desire to consummate. It was just a desire to deepen in friendship and deepen in self-sacrifice. And there must have been this moment of pure direction in his life. Like, this is my spouse. This is my son. I know exactly what I must do.
What my mission is.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And I think that leads us back to his fidelity to grace, mm-hmm. is that he just, it was this complete submission to God and his will, which, by the way, could also lead us to him being the terror of demons, was Joseph's complete and total submission to God. Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about that clarity of mission that you mentioned, that because of this, he knew his place. How does a man today, in 2021, have the clarity of mission that St. Joseph had? Grant, we're not all having dreams, per yeah. se, like St. Joseph did, but how do we take ourselves, especially for men, on a path of total submission and union with the will of God and his intentions for us in our lives?
Yeah, I know. We had this conversation last time I was on, and to really follow up on that, what I failed to mention last time was we can always look to the saints for direction. And I think that is so one of the huge benefits of being Catholic is that we have this army of saints that we could look to every single one of them, and every single saint has the same exact quality, and that is a virtuous life, a disciplined life, and total submission to God's will.
rooted in the sacraments. Rooted in the sacraments. Usually rooted intensely in Eucharistic devotion in particular.
Oh, absolutely. Definitely Eucharistic devotion. And I think that's, if that's a mission, or if that's direction, if that isn't, then I don't know what is, you know? And so if a man is looking for direction, whether you're single, married, you're in the religious life, doesn't matter what your state in life is. There is a saint that has had your life. You are mimicking a saint's life in some capacity. So there's somebody who has lived your life already, and there is somebody who has attained virtue and has a clear path or had that clear path that you can mimic.
Mm-hmm. It had similar circumstances, similar situations, similar temptations, frustrations, personality traits. You know, for some reason, I was talking to someone about this the other day. It's so easy when you become Catholic or are already Catholic and have this more intensified conversion where you almost start to think that I have to act how I think all the other Catholics act.
Sure.
And you lose yourself. You kind of become this adult personality. And I love religious life. I love religious sisters and priests. But sometimes I think we see this in particular with religious sisters. And not all the time. But where they almost lose some of the natural charisms of who they are. Their lives.
Yeah.
And not that you shouldn't, you know, leave some of your life behind, but there's nothing wrong with perhaps some of the humor you've had. There's nothing wrong with still having a passion for certain things. It's just meant to be tamed and put at the feet of Christ, those gifts, those talents, those joys, those personality quirks, and they should be enhanced all the more so before our Lord, not suddenly turn you into this kind of numb individual, which is what I see with many people. And it has probably occurred in my own life at times where you almost become dull through the process of conversion rather than becoming more so yourself.
Yeah, I agree. I think that there's there's a moment in our life where we must question if what we are doing is rightly ordered. That could be our hobbies, that could be our personality, that could be anything. And I think that when we can ask that question, that gives us clear direction. And specifically for men, finding that mission, asking the question, am I virtuous? So the answer should always be no, because we can never be virtuous enough. Am I leading a good life? The answer should be kind of. You should always be striving for perfection because that's what Christ calls us towards. We're not saying be perfect now. We're not saying you can't make mistakes. What we're saying is you need to attain the virtuous life. And in order to do that, that requires self-discipline. That requires a prayerful life. That requires an intimate relationship with the sacraments. And I'm not speaking for myself. I'm saying this is what the church is teaching us. Mm-hmm. And I am admitting on air that I fail every single day.
You're listening to Trending with Tim Murray. My husband Gabriel is joining me during the show. I don't believe that you fail every day. I think that you set an incredible example for us and our family. And I think that is what's important, is you continue to focus. What is my mission? What is my responsibility? It requires contemplation. It requires humility and prayer, which is why we've been talking about St. Joseph as the perfection of manhood, of fatherhood, and of patriarchy. I want to touch on this for just a moment to help kind of put this context. All of what we've been discussing in terms of St. Joseph and his masculinity and his leadership is what patriarchy is, taking responsibility and ownership and ultimately loving fatherhood is what's lived out in the patriarchy over all those entrusted to your care as a patriarch. And that's what St. Joseph was. And that's why the church continues to uphold patriarchy.
Sure. Patriarchy is more spiritual than anything else. There is no domination. It's just a patriarch is the spiritual head of the family.
He's a father.
He is the father. And that's why we have patriarchs in the church. That's why all Eastern churches have patriarchs. That's why St. Joseph is the patriarch. He's... you know, that's why every father is a patriarch of their family. It's because of that spiritual authority. And it's very telling when we have a culture that says, destroy the patriarchy. They don't understand, or maybe they do. Patriarchy is not a physical thing. It's not this overarching, dominated position. It's just if you want to be a patriarch, or if you're a husband or a father, and you know that you're a patriarch, the only question that you should ask yourself as patriarch is this: how do I lead my family to heaven?
That's been my husband Gabriel here on Trending with Timmeri. Thanks for hanging out with our family. Baby girl's been hanging out in the background. It's been great to be with you. Join me tomorrow for our weekly marriage hour here on Trending. We're actually going to discuss discernment, the importance of discernment, with a priest. And we'll talk about how maybe that can be a part of your own journey if you're still single. Figuring out, are you being called to married life? Guess what? All of us feel called to married life, think we're called to married life, even when there's a religious vocation possibly looming. Should I say looming? Maybe joyfully being offered and presented to us. Again, join us tomorrow during our weekly marriage hour here on Trending.
I just want to say real quick, thanks to everybody that calls in. It's so encouraging. What a great community it is. All the shows on Relevant Radio all day long. They're so uplifting.
Bringing Christ to the world through the media.
Relevant Radio.